Hi everyone, this is show host Marcia McMahon. Welcome to another evening of The Peaceful Planet. You were listening to The Peaceful Planet Mix by Chris Moores. This is a very exciting venture for me and BBS in that I'm honored to present every evening to you the music that is being channeled in from spirit by the mediumship of Bob Murray at www.thestarsstillshine. And what you just heard was The Peaceful Planet. The words are written by John Lennon in spirit. And the music was, in this case, a rendition by our own Chris Moores, who used to do the Creative Cosmos show. And he has a remarkable sound to, I think, John Lennon. And he took my words and lyrics and Bob's music and translated into a wonderful song about The Peaceful Planet, which is our theme song, so I thought you'd enjoy hearing that. We'll have to play more of it. We have a wonderful lineup tonight for our show. We're taking calls for angel readings at 1-877-876-5227. So if you have something perplexing you, you want to ask a question, have a little mini reading. We are also interviewing Mark Amaral Pinkham and the Guardians of the Holy Grail. Mark is back with us. Mark, are you there with us tonight?
Yes, I am. Good evening. I can't hear you very well, but I am here.
I will speak up then. Is that better?
That's better, yes.
All right. I'll make it a point to speak up, and I'll turn up the volume here. All right. So before we start our interview with Mark, I have a few things that I would like to mention. I have some very interesting messages that coincide with Mark's work, Guardians of the Holy Grail, which is our continuing series on the mysteries of the Grail, the mysteries of the Templars, the Cathars, all that's been revealed in the Da Vinci Code, and of course our emphasis on the goddess and the divine feminine. And Mark does a thorough scholarly exegesis of all of these themes in his book. And we are going to bring to life to you the actual words from Mary Magdalene that I channeled in some time ago from her about this very controversy that is raging throughout the world right now based on the film. So even though a lot of people have seen the film and many still may be wondering, Mark is going to help us clarify that. And before I bring Mary Magdalene's message, I also want to read a message from Princess Diana, who gives regular messages on the Middle East. Our hearts are lightened tonight with the knowledge that there is a ceasefire coming up in the Middle East, and I know all of you light workers and peace workers out there have been adding your prayers of light for the Middle East, and I've asked you to do that on my show many times, and we know we have our light workers all over the world praying for peace in that troubled region. We're delighted to see some kind of progress being made, although they don't seem to want to stop the fighting until the very minute that they're supposed to be adhering to the ceasefire. So Princess Diana has some words about the ceasefire, and I will try to be brief about this. It's a brief message, so let me proceed. Diana, I'm here at the ready to hear from you if there's anything you wish to say. Diana, it is good to be back with you, Marcia, my dear, and I hope you had a pleasant vacation. We are pleased with the progress that the UN Security Council is making with the ceasefire arrangements. We have items we wish to emphasize, and we hope they will be heard at the highest office. Do go on then, Diana. Indeed, I will. The conditions of the ceasefire matter not so much as the ceasefire itself. So much bickering amongst the diplomats whilst innocent children are being bombed and rocketed. Many lives are at stake. More war will ignite more fires, and the people of Lebanon particularly have suffered greatly. The whole country's infrastructure is gone, and there are no adequate bridges or roads out of there. The people of Tyre are held hostage by nightly bombing campaign, and they need water, food, and medical relief. If any of you really reading my messages are in a position to give to the Red Cross, please donate some of your money to this most important cause. While supplies are not moving right now, they will be as soon as the ceasefire is put into place. I ask this help in my name, Diana, Princess of Wales, and I hope that my fund will see fit to expand on this help in time. And then she goes on to say that Well, I never condone terrorist activity. The root causes of terror are the suffering of the Palestinian and now Lebanese people. If the ceasefire is set up and an international border of peacekeepers installed, that will suffice to keep Israel safe. We do feel that the cause of terror must be addressed at its source, which are inequality, refugee camps, lack of work and opportunity, and lack of education. The many members of the international community adequately address these issues, the human race has a chance to change this cycle of violence and turn instead finally to peace. Let it be sooner than later. Too many have died, and so many people's lives and livelihoods are in ruins in both Lebanon and Israel. As well, we also recognize the difficulty that the government of Lebanon is having in addressing Hezbollah and Iran. Iran must be met head-on with the diplomacy and legitimate negotiations, even with the diplomats from the U.S., if possible. There is no one but the U.S. that can do this and ask Israel to stop and sign the agreements and also to confront Iran. It is a delicate situation, but an immediate ceasefire is the only humanitarian thing that needs to be done. My channel has the answers, and we ask you to hear her words from spirit. They are true and right. Thank you, Diana, but you have all the answers. I'm merely the scribe for your voice and ideas. You are quite humble. We ask all light workers and peace workers to put pressure on any elected officials and to get on with the ceasefire. This senseless war is lingering while the children continue to die. I am with all of you in this time of trouble. My love, Diana, Princess of Peace for the Nations. So she's been channeling these messages regularly, and we feature them when they're particularly relevant to world events. And again, I want to emphasize my book, With Love from Diana, Queen of Hearts, is available at my website at www.dianaspeakstotheworld.com, and she gives very relevant, timely information about what we can do for diplomacy and to save the people of the Middle East from this terrible suffering. And she knew all the answers before all of this erupted, had they been out there and heard. But we are ever grateful to BBS for letting these messages be heard and letting us offer you, our listeners, a message of hope, peace, and diplomacy that will, in time, affect the Middle East. So I appreciate that we have many subjects to cover this evening, and I am opening up our lines at 877-876-5227, and I want to move then to our special guest, Mark Amaru Pinkham, and he has written The Guardians of the Holy Grail. And before I bring him into the conversation, I'm going to read a little bit about Mark Amaru Pinkham's bio here. He is a noted author, lecturer, researcher, and Templar Knight of the Order of the Scottish Knight Templars. As well, he is the co-director of the North American branch of the International Order of Gnostic Templars and the Seven Rays of Healing School. Throughout his exciting Da Vinci Code journey, Mark focuses on the mysteries put forth by Dan Brown in his book, Helping Them to Come Alive. Additionally, he will share cutting-edge information from his research that further reveals the Da Vinci Code mysteries as written about in his fourth book, Guardians of the Holy Grail, the Knights Templar, John the Baptist, and the Water of Life. And that is offered by Adventures Unlimited Publishing. And Mark's website is www.davincicodejourneys.com. So welcome to you, Mark, and thank you for your patience and allowing me to read the book.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
It's great to have you back. I've been delving into your great work again this afternoon and rereading certain parts of it that I either didn't get the first time or find, you know, really fascinating. And for the benefit of our listeners, because there's so much sophisticated material in the book about all the various different sects, the Gnostic sects, different Mandian, Nazari sects, and all these different branches and offshoots of early Christianity that you delineate so carefully. I wonder if you could just kind of give us a little bit of an overview of some of these offshoot Gnostic practices and different sects and where they all stand in terms of how they fit into, say, the Grail mystery, the Mary Magdalene line, and that sort of thing, if that's not too broad a question.
No, I don't think it is at all, actually. I think you can say that definitely in one way or another they are part of the Holy Grail tradition, as we Templars are. Part of the work we've done in the order is to be able to trace back our history and the lineage that we were initiated into in the Holy Land. This is the ancient Holy Grail lineage, and what we found is that you can actually trace it all the way back to India and Sri Lanka. And so you could say, in a sense, that it is a brotherhood, a lineage that unites East and West spiritual traditions together. And this is what we as Templars attempt to do in the world, is to come to a synthesis, to bring together the divergent spiritual traditions until we create a one world spiritual tradition. What we found is that the Gnostic tradition, the Holy Grail tradition, really begins in the East, and it begins with masters who were what's known today as Kundalini masters. They're able to transmit a particle of their energy into a disciple and thereby initiate that disciple into the path of the Holy Grail, or shall we say alchemical unfoldment. That particle of energy will go to awaken their inner energy known as their Kundalini, and when that's awakened, it does all the work of transmuting them alchemically so that ultimately they can tap into their own gnosis that exists within them. It's in a dormant state, but it always exists within them. And so these great masters that are full of this power, this energy that can do this, are really the original Holy Grails. The original Holy Grails are known in the literature, in the legends, as the original Fisher Kings, who were great masters of the East that were embodiments of this energy. They were chalices, you could say. They were cups full of this energy. And the remains of these Fisher Kings are the masters that are still exist in the East, that are still full of this power, this energy. Well, what we've traced back to is a great master that has many different names. He's known in many different traditions, as Al-Qadir, Mordegin. He's known as Jan Pandita, the father of Gnosis. So the whole Gnostic, or many Gnostic lineages and traditions, begin with him. And today, his main temple area, his main sacred area on the planet, is in Sri Lanka. And so what we have found is that he actually established many lineages of these masters. You could say many Holy Grail lineages. One of them went west with the Mandaeans. The Mandaeans still exist today as a people that live in southern Iraq. Well, they took the teachings and the power west, and they became one with the Egyptian, Sumerian, Persian traditions, but ultimately they merged with the Essene tradition of the Jews, and then they produced the branch of Essenes known as the Nazarenes, Nazareans or the Nazarenes. Okay, and it was so in that sect that John the Baptist and Jesus were born.
Right, and it is known now, or theorized even by conservative biblical scholars, that Jesus and John were Essenes. And then if you've read any of the esoteric literature or the Edgar Cayce readings or any of that, you know that John and Jesus were raised by the Essenes and are part of that entire tradition. But John carries on the Mandaean line, and I thought that the research you did on the Mandaeans, which is what I was reading today, was particularly interesting because it's so different. You know, those of us that are raised in the Christian tradition, a lot of people that were raised in the Christian tradition are questioning everything with the Christian tradition, but the Mandaeans almost look to John the Baptist as the Messiah more so than to Jesus Christ, and I thought that was an interesting insight, and then that is, I guess, the Templars continued that tradition of revering John the Baptist as an equal to Jesus.
That's right.
You could elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, amongst the Gnostics and the Gnostic sects of the West, John the Baptist became known as the father of Gnosticism. You know, he was, you might say, the first Mandaean prophet to really establish the schools and traditions of Gnosticism, and then they were passed from him to Jesus, and then Jesus' disciples. And this is one reason that the Templars themselves, who were initiated into the Gnostic tradition, tended to put John in a little bit higher up place in their estimation than Jesus, because John was the founder of the tradition and he was the teacher of Jesus. But also, you know, if you read the Dead Sea Scrolls, one thing that stands out is that it was known that the Essenes were expecting two messiahs, not just one. One was mm-hmm. to be born into the tribe of David, and he would be the kingly messiah. One was to be born in the tribe of Levi. He was to be the priestly messiah. And, of course, John was born into the tribe of Levi, and then Jesus into the tribe of David. But so John being the priestly messiah was actually one rung up over Jesus, who was the kingly messiah, you see, because John, being the priestly messiah, was closer to Yahweh, you know, and all the priests were rung up over the kings and the rulers, you know. So this is how it all started, this idea that, you know, John was co-messiah or maybe even, you know, a greater messiah than Jesus.
Apparently,
and
according to the Mandians, he performed all the same miracles that Jesus did. Although that's not recorded in the Bible, but it is recorded in other esoteric writings, the Mandian writings.
That Jesus did what?
That John the Baptist performed a lot of miracles.
Oh, yes, right.
Performed, but it's not widely recognized. And then John, the beloved disciple, kind of takes over the mantle once John is beheaded in the Bible. So that's very interesting, too, that the two Johns follow the same tradition. And then they seem to be, as far as I can tell from your research and from really looking into the scripture, too, it looks to me as though Mary Magdalene was closely associated with John the Beloved Disciple, since both were at the cross.
That's right, yeah. What you find, what we've been able to find is, by studying various traditions and our own tradition, is that John the Baptist passed this Holy Grail tradition of power and wisdom to Jesus, and then Jesus apparently passed it to John the Apostle and Mary Magdalene, two apostles at the foot of the cross. And from that point on, those two became the patron and patronesses of most of the Gnostic sects that evolved later on. And of course, their main texts were the Gospel of St. John and the Book of Revelation that was channeled by John. But after that...
It was the Gospel of Mary, too, which was recently...
Well, that's right. Yeah, you don't hear too much about that, but that is true. You know, the Gospel of Mary, the Gospel of Philip, a lot of the apocryphal Gospels that were thrown out or became secretive after the Council of Nicaea, they were also subscribed to by the Gnostics. And of course, all those Gnostic Gospels found in Nag Hammadi, you know, that include references to Mary as being very closely aligned to Jesus and being, if not the most important apostle, certainly one of the most important apostles, and even his consort and his wife. So.
Well,
all that is there in the gospel text.
And I have that. If we may diverge and let me read the message now. I was kind of saving it for the end of the program, but since we're on the topic of Mary, and this corroborates your research, I have an extraordinary message from Mary Magdalene that I'd like to bring into the conversation, if I may, because she has come to me with this message to clear up the 2,000-year debate, as it were, as to her true identity. So,
great.
She says to me, I'm saying to her, "Dear Mary, you came to me last night in meditation. Is there anything you wish to say about your relationship to Jesus?" Mary Magdalene speaking. "My child and friend, it is true of our romantic relationship. I was the woman who sat at the feet of the Master Yeshua, described in your Bible as the house of Martha and Mary. I was the receptive one to him and fell in love with the Master Yeshua. We held a friendship for many years before our romance blossomed, shortly before the crucifixion. Those were both wonderful and terrible days. I gave birth to the child of Jesus, named her Sarah, and raised her in Egypt and then France, because because of the fiery persecution of all followers of Christ or Yeshua in the Roman Empire, or Gaul, as France was known then, our identity was a secret to all but a select few. Sarah was my sunshine child and my consolation in losing the love of my life, my husband, Jesus, Yeshua. She provided me an outlet of joy. I did write down the teaching of the Master recorded in my gospel. However, that book has been distorted also by the Church Fathers. I am of the divine feminine, and I speak with compassion about the power of the sacred feminine. It was the mission of the Master Yeshua to bring me to leadership in our circles, which did occur with the apostles who supported me. It was later removed, and my memory denigrated to that of a harlot. Call upon me for strength, compassion, and help in childbirth. My sacred bloodline even exists today in France and England, and I leave you with a thought. History is told by the ones who control power. Look again within yourself to the kingdom of God, goddess within for truth. My love to all who hear and recognize me, Mary of Magdalene. So there you have it. It confirms all of your research, Mark.
Well, I mean, we're definitely on awesome. The same page, aren't we?
We definitely are. And you've got, you know, she's speaking here of her sacred bloodline existing in England, and I know you went over to Scotland, and you've been doing extensive research on the bloodline, you know, and the, with the Templars and all of that. And I've seen some of the, you know, the records you have in your book of the different Priory of Sion leaders, and I thought that was pretty good research. But you know, it's a really interesting thing that she says here, that the bloodline even exists in France and England. That's, you know, that's highly debated among the world today, and certainly, you know, a provocative statement. People will get all upset to hear that.
Well,
but I think it's fascinating.
It's hard to trace back farther than the Merovingians. Even when Pierre Plantard was alive, calling himself the Grand Master of the Priory of Sion, he couldn't prove that his lineage went back any further than Merovingians. It just isn't the records for, you know. And so that's what we need to do now. We need to find those records that are going to trace back the lineages from the Merovingians back as far as to Jesus and Mary. Most of those lineages have already have been traced back by priests and monks of the Catholic Church who acted as the genealogists of the kings and queens of Europe. See, the kings and queens had these extensive genealogies, and they were the only ones that really had them. But that supported their claim to the throne, that they were, that they could trace back their lineages back to, ultimately back to Solomon and David, and even to the biblical patriarchs.
Right.
And so since at that time there was the idea of Jesus and Mary actually having a family, it wasn't even thought about. I mean, not only was it totally radical, it wasn't even a thought in anyone's mind. So they went ahead and they traced out the genealogies while excluding Jesus and Mary's line.
Yeah.
And so this is what you have. You've got all these extensive genealogies now that go all the way back to the Merovingians and back to David and Solomon and the biblical patriarchs. But there's, of course, there's no mention of Jesus and Mary. So, you know, it's like we have to, like, throw all these out in some regard, or try to find an offshoot or a branch here or there where that links on to another, this other lineage of Jesus and Mary.
See, what she's saying in the message here is that, you know, she had to remain, because of the fiery persecution, she had to remain kind of in secret in France. So it's possible that very few people, but the very well-initiated and close confidants who were around her in France, knew of her true identity and of her marriage to Jesus and who the Holy Child was, too. So, you know, she's indicating that there were reasons why she couldn't reveal her true identity, even when she was in France. And yes, it is known that she began the Merovingian line, but it is also interesting that the Church, you know, found fault with the Merovingians and needed to completely, you know, wipe them off the face of the earth. And they also wiped out the Templars for a lot of the same reasons, I think. And they're just completely threatened by this idea.
Right, of course, yeah.
Of anything but what they think, what the church fathers. And of course, a lot of it started with Constantine and the Council of Nicaea, but then it just goes from bad to worse with the extreme persecution that they did to the Templars in the Middle Ages. It's just unbelievable, you know, Christians doing that to Christians, more or less. But, you know, it's been going on. But I think their agenda was to wipe out any trace of anything that they considered heresy. And it was all, you know, like she says here, the history is told by the ones who control power. Boy, is that ever right. But I think your work is very important because it brings out the substantial amount of research that you've done in the history to substantiate these claims, which a lot of people want to just dismiss as, well, if it's not in the Bible, then it's not there, or if it's not in the lineages, you know, the historical lineages. And unfortunately, it's just, you know, it's a matter, I guess it's another matter of faith, because we have very little to go on except maybe my channeled message and your research, but there's an awful lot of research out there now substantiating these interesting and very divergent forms of thought that existed in the early Christian church.
Well, you know, I think that we might be close to finding or discovering this genealogy. There's a man named Tim Wallace Murphy, who's famous for his book on Roslyn, mm-hmm. Roslyn Chapel, and he talks about giving a lecture some years ago in France, and when he completed the lecture, there was a man that came up and talked to him, and the man said that he was descended from the family of Jesus, the family of Jesus that were also priests of the Jewish culture and the Jewish tradition. They actually separated or left the Holy Land, and then they spread out throughout Europe. And so they became part of many different lineages of kings and queens. And he claims to have been in that lineage. Well, unfortunately, Tim Wallace Murphy didn't get his name or number or contact information, and he's never been able to find him again. Though we get quite a bit of information that one night.
Well, that's like the story itself, the Da Vinci Code. But what I love about the idea of any Holy Grail is the whole idea that Jesus brought up in the Gospels, which I think does come to us intact with its Gnostic connotation, which is this, that the kingdom is within you. And that is what Gnosticism is basically preaching, that everything, the inner knowledge, is from within, that you don't need an external church or a priest or somebody else to tell you what to think or what is true.
Well,
that,
exactly,
that is exactly, to me, that's what the essence of Gnosticism boils down to. Tell me if you think that that's a pretty good appraisal, or am I...
No, absolutely. That's what we're all about in our organization. We're trying to get people to tap into that wisdom, that knowledge. You know, we believe this is why that the Holy Grail is becoming so popular, because that the whole Gnostic tradition and the Holy Grail tradition, they've always been intertwined or interconnected, you see, because the Holy Grail tradition was about passing on this power that I've been talking about. The Holy Grail, the true Holy Grail is the power of an object or a chalice or a spear or a sword, and it's that power that initiates the process of alchemical transformation within you. And that process leads you to gnosis, you see. It leads you into your inner wisdom. So the path, the Holy Grail path, and the masters of those paths, they also were the masters of gnosis. And by passing on this power that could alchemically transform a seeker or a disciple, they could ultimately take that disciple inside themselves to contact their inner wisdom, and then they would be like John the Baptist, living out in the wilderness on locusts and honey, and never needing a book or never needing anybody else or anything to tell them the way things are, because they found it within themselves. Yeah.
And that is, I think, the beauty of some of the early Christian traditions that have been all but obliterated. But I think the Egyptian desert fathers revered Mary Magdalene and kept her text for some time. And I guess that's how the text came down to us, because the Nag Hammadi were found out in the deserts of Egypt, and they were removed from the Alexandria Library because they were considered heresy, and they were put inside of a clay pot, put out into the desert, and lo and behold, it turns up in the 20th century. Now, isn't that an interesting coincidence that that came to us? And all these secrets and all these archaeological revelations are all kind of coming at the same time, as though this was supposed to kind of happen at this time.
Well, absolutely, yeah. Now's the time, and that's why I'm saying that this is why the Holy Grail is becoming so popular, because the true Holy Grail, the power, is what we need to know about, is what we need to pursue, or what we need to take within ourselves so that we can contact that gnosis, because we're ready for the gnosis.
Well, gnosis being nothing less than enlightenment, and that's what we're all about here at BBS Radio and the Peaceful Planet, and bringing peace to the planet finally, instead of having Illuminati controlling our world, the weaponry, the wars, all of that. There's a whole new perspective that's dawning on humankind right now. It's unprecedented, I feel, and I feel that more than myself and others that are seeking the path of truth are seeking it within themselves instead of looking to outside sources like religion, for instance. And religion seems to be doing kind of a poor job of it all over the world right now, because religion is what all the fighting still seems to be a lot about. So
right.
It seems to me that your work is particularly keen because you unite so many religious traditions into one umbrella idea of truth and enlightenment, going all the way back to Sri Lanka, and then bringing it up into the biblical times, and then bringing it further up into your interest with the Templars. And it all seems to be part of an enlightenment tradition that at one time was only available to secret societies, because otherwise you lost your life. You were burned at the stake as a heretic. But now we don't have that extreme fear of extreme persecution from the Catholic Church because they're no longer in control. In fact, it looks to me as though, and I, you know, I was raised Catholic. I'm not putting down the Church. I'm just saying it certainly looks as though they're losing a lot of ground right now.
Well, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, our job is, or what we've made our work, because we believe this was the goal of the original Templars, is to unite the various spiritual traditions together, which is why we're having various conferences. And one important conference we're having is in 2008, which will be at this temple compound of this great master who founded all the Holy Grail, all these Holy Grail lineages, this Sanat Kumara, Mordegan Al-Qadir. He's actually worshipped by many different traditions. Right there on the temple compound, you've got mosques, you've got stupas, and you've got Hindu temples. You've got Buddhists, Muslims, and Hindus all worshiping the same being.
Are you saying this is in Sri Lanka then? Mark?
This is in Sri Lanka, yeah. And Muslims believe that Sri Lanka is the original Garden of Eden. So, in a sense, we're trying to take everyone back to the very, very beginning of it all, before when we were experiencing the truest and purest form of spirituality before we diverged and created all these dogmatic religious traditions.
And the fall came in pretty heavily.
Right.
There.
And so what we're doing is we're inviting representatives from all these various traditions that has this being, Sanat Kumara Morgan, in their tradition, although they might not call him that. For example, the Muslims refer to him as Al-Qadir. You know, there's many different names for him. But we're going to try to bring them all to Sri Lanka, and then when we're there, we can say, yeah, okay, you know, we're all coming from the same place. We all worship this one master. He plays a special role in all our traditions, and in many cases, he was the founder of all our traditions. And so ultimately, we are all one, and this is how we began, and ultimately, we diverge. But this is where we're all linked together, and so we are all one tradition, ultimately, if you go back far enough.
Now, is this being organized by yourself, or by the Templars, or all these organizations together? Or?
Well, it's myself and our organization, the International Order of Gnostic Templars, yeah. But I have somebody in Sri Lanka who's actually organized conferences that where the theme was this being, you know, this great being. But the people that came to talk about him and share about him were all from the East. And so this will be the first time that there'll be representatives from both East and West. So it'll be my job to bring her from the west, and he'll bring her from the east.
Oh, your work is wonderful. I'd sure be interested in finding out more about that, maybe coming to something like that. That sounds wonderful. I am very interested in the work that I do in uniting and seeing the oneness of religious traditions, because Princess Diana in particular has mentioned that so much of the world conflict right now is over religion, and yet so many of these religions hold the same truth, and it's just a matter of delving deeper into the mysteries, as you have, to understand that these many religious traditions are really all coming from the same source. God keeps sending his messengers, and the human race keeps getting the message wrong. And then they start writing the message down, and then the followers come, and the followers try to decipher it and make it into a religion instead of making it into a spiritual practice, in essence, something that's there to uplift one's soul. They start getting caught up in the wordage, and if you don't believe exactly like what it says in the Bible, the Koran, the whatever, then, you know, you can't be on the path. Well, this is the whole thing that's hanging up the whole human race. And anyone that's out there trying to put together a path of unity and a path of recognition that all these masters came and taught in God's name and performed miracles, and all of us have the inner divine spark, and we're all part of the same fabric of God, all children of God. We need to live in peace as one, you know. So it's an amazing time that we're living in, and I applaud your work with this, because I'm working on the same concepts in my work, and I think a lot of light workers are opening up to the possibilities that religion doesn't have all the answers, and that we really need to go within, and then secondly, to look for the greatness in all of the world religions, and to bring that as a unity factor instead of as a dividing factor, which it very much is a dividing factor as well as a unifying factor right now in the world. And it's up to us, those of us seeking light, to bring it as a unifying message. So I think that your work is interesting, and I'd certainly like to know more about the Sri Lanka trip. Is that on your website, Mark?
It isn't yet because, it doesn't happen until February 2008, but as soon as we get into 2007, we'll definitely have it there, and I'll be certainly talking about it a lot in the newsletters I sent out. And anybody that wants to get on our newsletter list, you can go to our website, www.gnostictemplars.org, and sign up, and then you get all the updated information about not only the Sri Lanka conference, but other conferences we're having. We're having another one in Glastonbury, the home of the Holy Grail Mysteries, next July.
That's the one I think I'm going to want to go to. And Andrea invited me on the Goddess Tour. Is that what you're speaking of, or is the Glastonbury something different?
Oh, this is the Goddess Tour is in, I think, March, and that goes, that's going to places specifically related to Mary Magdalene and the Black Madonna tradition.
I'm going to be reading that. So
yeah, that'll be fabulous. But this one's a little bit later. This one's in July, and our goal through this conference is to reveal that the Holy Grail isn't just one thing, one object, one person,
right,
as many of us have been led to believe recently. I mean, it's actually the power, the energy, as I mentioned, that transforms one alchemically and takes them to their own gnosis. So the Holy Grail path is actually the primal path, the archetypal path that you find running through all traditions all throughout the world.
And I totally agree with that concept. The Grail is within you, as Jesus taught, and it is a remarkable time in which we are able to go on all these Grail pilgrimages all over the world with you and your body, mind, spirit journeys and Knights Templar journeys, and then we can also delve within. I'd like to, we have to close now, we're already at time. I'd like to close with a brief message that I received today from Mother Mary, and it relates very much to your work and mine, Mark, and I want to thank you again for coming on our show. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, and we never cover it all, do we?
there's so much, but thank you very much for having me on.
Dollar. No, it was great, and we'll mention your website, DaVinciCodeJourneys.com, and if you would mention the Templar.
All right, www.gnostictemplars.org.
Gnostictemplars.org, and let me read my message, and then we'll close with a song. My child, and this is Mother Mary speaking, my child, is once again my honor to speak through you to our listeners. Your magnificent work for peace in the Middle East will not be forgotten. Do not be discouraged in doing good without pay or in the church's rejection of your work. The churches reject many who are of wisdom, and in time you will be welcomed in many churches. One has to wonder if my son Jesus returned, would the churches welcome him? The answer lies in each listener's heart. Religion is tearing this planet apart, bit by bit. Each proclaims its versions of the truth. My son Jesus taught the truth. The truth is within you as a kingdom. I ask all listeners to open to wisdom and to my love for each. I stand with Princess Diana for world peace. I am Mary, Queen of Peace. Diana has earned her title as Princess of Peace. May peace be upon the children of the Middle East. Mother Mary, Queen of Peace. So what a lovely message from Mother Mary to come through for our listening audience tonight. And we thank everyone listening to The Peaceful Planet, and we send out good thoughts of love and peace to all of our listeners, and especially to those people in the Middle East, and we, as we continue to hold light and peace for that part of the world. We thank our wonderful guest, Mars Amaru Pinkham, and his book is called The Guardians of the Holy Grail. And I think we will close with one of our special songs, The Remarkable Diana, which is written by Bob Murray, but it's actually inspired from John Lennon from The Other Side. It's a wonderful song, and we'll be closing with that song. So thank you for joining us. Please join us again next week. And good night from the Peaceful Planet. This is Marcia McMahon.